Brother, I know.
Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We got power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now we got to do the right thing.
We for UNITY.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now we got to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Kambodja, we'll embrace with love.
That's right. That's right. We are going to do it right, and we got the power. So we better start trying to use that power before they take it all away from us. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, coming to you live at from Harris Stowe State University with the blessings of Black Radio Hall of Fame. And so we are here, and we want to tell you and warn you that some of the views and comments that you might hear are not those of Harris Stowe State University or Black Radio Hall of Fame, but I'm willing to believe that most of them I agree with. So we're going to introduce our guest. Today we have OBS founders Babatu Charles Murphy and Colleen Mulindesha, and we also have representing the Youth Council for Positive Development, Maisha Johnson. So welcome to the studio.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
You both, thank you for having us all here.
Yeah. So one of the things we talked about last time is the history of the organization, and today's what's going on almost simultaneously to this broadcast and possibly tomorrow. The Board of Alder people are reviewing plans for surveillance. And so I just, you know, when we think about who just won the presidency, and what he has in store for us, especially people that are going to be considered enemy combatants, where do you see surveillance in our society, and how can we safeguard people's personal liberties, but also their personal, privacy? So just anybody can start, but, you know, the whole surveillance is often presented to us as this is going to keep you safe. And most people, as soon as we walk out our door, most of us are being surveilled in some kind of way, either somebody's ring phone or the service station at the store. It's cameras everywhere, but people still don't feel safe. So what do y'all think about that?
Well, I think it's surveillance has always been in our lives. And sometimes we joke, you know, that when a certain disturbance or something happened, they were changing the tape. That's how we put it back in the day when we had our own FBI person, a Black person, that, you know, you would thought, oh, he's cool. My point is everything in this country system is designed to know more about us than we know about them, and that's what we deal with all the time. And for them to come out and say we want to do more surveillance for, you know, us, for the people, it seems the surveillance needs to be of government, police, any agency that claims to be functioning in our behalf. We need more ways to surveil and know what they're up to, what they're planning, and so forth.
But it's interesting when you say they, and you clarified it by saying it's the government and government entities. But those are not the only people surveilling us. You got all of the Google folks, Mr. Zuckerman, you know, what we say on Facebook and some of these other social media, that's a form of surveillance. So is there any way that we get out of this where we still are protected as citizens?
I don't think so, because throughout the whole history of this country, and of course it started out with the slave catchers, you know, surveilling, like, you know, all of us that was trying to get away from being enslaved, as well as like those house Negroes that was doing this snitching, all the way up to the modern times when we had snitches up and down, like, you know, that the FBI employed. And then, of course, nowadays it's real easy, because with Facebook and all those other kinds of things, everybody is free talking, thinking they're talking to their friends. No, you're talking to the U.S. government, because who started, who funded all of the internet and stuff? It's like the U.S. government, and they're stepping in and say, okay, well, we got to make sure everybody that's against us, that we know exactly what the plan is. And so, therefore, we have to understand that anything we talk about is definitely being watched and listened to and stuff. And so our main thing is we need to demand, hey, stop all that, because we have First Amendment rights and privacy and stuff. And so we have to fight for control of all these entities.
What do you think, Maisha?
We keep us safe, right? That's something that Fruit Freedom Community Center often says. So you may have heard it many, many times. We keep us safe. We keep us safe. That's something that they say at Freedom Community Center. We keep us safe. So you may have heard it many, many times. And we've always had the lady on the block that looked out the window and knew what the kids were doing and who was coming in and out the neighbor's house. So, yeah. We don't need the extra stuff. We know they're going to implement those things, because the government, they are lazy watching us instead of sitting in front of our homes or on the corner surveillancing us. We also need to listen to the children. They're paying attention, and they're next to come after us, and they're going to be heavily surveillanced, more than what they're already experiencing, knowing what's to come and what they've already experienced up to today's present date. It is important that we continue to pay attention to this type of surveillance that is being presented to us, not just as a community, as a state, but as a nation. Mm. There are many entities that are surveillancing us, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And they don't even live on our land.
Exactly. And that's why I said it's not just the U.S. government, but you got other entities, whether it be Russia or other folks who have access. I mean, the technology is there for anybody, and that's the thing. But one of the things that I think is interesting in terms of what you all said is that we've been under some level of surveillance since we came to these shores, and I'm talking about people of African descent. And it's not always been bad, because you talked about, like, the person, you know, the neighbor across the street that kept a watchful eye on us. Yes, you know, we appreciated that, and our parents appreciated that. And we didn't see the negative side of that. But now it's gone to a global scale, and now we do have to be concerned about it.
Mama Jamala, it's very deep. So my granddaughter was playing Roblox, and I heard an adult voice ask her, can we be friends? And I say, no, you cannot. And why are you on here with a 4-year-old?
See what I'm saying? Yeah. So when we got Alexis in our home and we got other stuff, we are willingly, like, exposing our personal lives to being exposed and surveilled. So I just, part of what I think we haven't had a real in-depth conversation in our communities is the role of surveillance. Mm-hmm. And so I know what we've countered as we've folks ask for, like more cameras in our community, is to be able to say those cameras are not going to help us. I know there were some older people some years ago that spent a ton of money that supposedly have come to the wards for surveillance because people were fearful. They thinking about crime and this is going to reduce crime. It did not, as we said, it would not. And now those cameras are in, you know, alleys in disrepair. And so we wasted money. But, you know, the conversation, if folks want to really be a part of that right now, the Board of Aldermen, go to that website, see what time it is. They are going to be open for public comment. And if you got a view on this, you need to let them know. And if you can't get there, you need to know who your alderperson is so that you can get directly to them. So that's just one of the many issues I think that, you know, the Organization for Black Struggle has dealt with over the years and watched that whole surveillance thing evolve and knowing at some point, because some of us were active pre-OBS, which was 1980, as Babatou said, we were surveilled by the FBI, and we were part of COINTELPRO, and so we think we know a little bit about surveillance. So let's get on that, y'all. Let's see what we can find out, the information we can find out, what is in the laws that people are getting ready to pass so that we can be aware of it. Don't wait till they pass it, and then you get stopped or you something happens, and you say, well, where did this come from? Yeah, we got to be woke, y'all. We got to be totally woke. So let's talk about the Organization for Black Struggle, founded in 1980. Why was it founded? Khalifa Babatou.
I think it was founded because that's the kind of people we decided to be. We came from different backgrounds, music, teaching. There's all kinds of things, protesting, drafting, and, you know, having to run off and fight wars, that the country we're in starts or whatever, you know what I'm saying? We have learned over the years to be careful and to care about our people. I think that concept of our people, my people, is the big deal. Especially like you say, in the 80s, 70s, as we learned about our history as African people, as we learned about concepts like the diaspora, then all the people in history that inspired us all had that concern for our people. And I know personally that phrase, you know, my people, our people, saved me in a whole lot of situations. So I'm basically saying, on one hand, that's what we were bound to be doing, is figuring out how to share these concepts of who we are and where we came from.
And so I think that belly, the burning in the belly is, you're right, you know, some of us came with that, but we also got some nudges from our elders, Khalimu, pre OBS that moved us in a certain direction. So you want to talk about that a bit, like the historical context of how we moved from the Congress of African People into the Organization for Black Struggle?
Well, I will start off by just saying that I go back to 1968. Forest Park Community College, Association of Black Collegians. And so we was fighting there for Black studies against the racism and stuff that was on the campuses as we experienced it then. But, you know, we all knew that it was going to take more than what we was doing on the campus to win the struggles. And so after years of us going in different directions, we came together after I got out of military prison for refusing to go and fight in the Vietnam War, because I felt that that was not where black folks were supposed to be. Bottom line, my thing was, I thought real hard while in prison. I said, we need a black organization. And I was checking out Congress of African People readings and writings and all those different revolutionaries, Rep Brown, et cetera. And so the thing was, when we get out, and when I got out, it's like, let's form an organization. And so some of the folks in this room, Jamala and Baba Two and other folks, we formed what was first called Working Always Through Unity. But then we knew that the struggle was not just local, that the struggle was national and international. And so then we traveled around the country and we checked out a lot of different organizations. But the one we thought was the most dynamic was the Congress of African People, because it basically had the principles of fight for self-determination, self-respect, and self-defense, all levels of struggle, and actually being organized to take that struggle on and fight to move forward. So we started back there then and was involved with many different coalitions and many different organizations, National Black United Front, National Black Assembly, et cetera, a lot of different things to finally get us to where we are now. But in particular, but it, then we came to 1980, and in 1980, at that point, COINTELPRO had, it just had just destroyed the whole movement. We said, hey, that vacuum, we got to step in. And so all of us, willing, able-bodied people in all the struggles Bob Two was talking about, we all came together, workers, students, just everyday, like people that that's unemployed, everybody, we just came together and we said, hey, we are going to fight to move the struggle of our people forward. And I'll just leave it at that for starters.
So I know one of the things that we were clear about when you said we looked around and we didn't see any organizations that were advocating and fighting with and for the black working class. And so we made that a particular tenet of what we believe. And so that's where all our struggles, you know, reside. It's like for the black working class. So, you know, but how important are organizations, and particularly now, Maisha, that we see, you know, really assaults and attacks on any organized entity, whether it be a union or a neighborhood group? Why is it important that we be organized right now?
It's important that we understand that how we are impacted by the things that we experience as we live this thing called life, and the opportunities that we have to be vocal in spaces. The thought of that being stripped away is
scary.
I don't want to say scary because I'm trying to work on the wording that I use because my body reacts to certain wording. And that's part of trauma, right? And the experience that we have and knowing what's to come. And how do we keep us safe? As I said before, nonprofits are needed because they are what help keep the lights on. We know that there are programs and other things that help us be sustainable in our homes will soon disappear or shrink to where it's bare minimum. As well as a lot of these programs that are going to be available won't be so accessible for low-income families. So there's a lot at risk, not just our freedom of speech, our freedom to organize, our freedom to say that's not right and call people out. That that's at risk, you all. And we need to utilize the little time that we do have and start organizing what that looks like in the small window that we do have to be vocal and utilize our voices. It's important that we understand what's impacting our communities and no longer just sit back and wait for them to bring something to the table and present our own platter.
Yeah, and probably even make our own table. And I'm thinking about, as you were talking, that there are different kinds of nonprofits. There are community-based organizations who do the kind of mutual aid to to make sure that people have basic needs, because obviously, if you don't have a living wage job, there's these gaps, and somebody is stepping up to do that. But there's also other organizations that are fighting for power. And so I think those in this particular climate are going to be targeted by the Trump administration as enemy combatants. And so I think for us who, as you put it so eloquently, there is a window. And we better understand that that window is going to shut. But for an organization like OBS, who is not necessarily about mutual aid, but about building power for the working class, we have to be resolved that we're going to continue to fight by any means necessary, no matter what the situation is. It just means tactics might change, but our basic principles are not going to change, and we're going to stand in solidarity with our people, whatever that means. And so, at whatever cost. And so, I think, you know, the kind of political climate that we are about to experience is probably unlike what folks have never experienced in this country. And I think the reason that there's probably some lackadaisical attitudes is because we've always had a stopgap. You know, either the government stood in and adjusted prices for inflation so people didn't get so outraged. And so there's always been like, let's do this, you know, tweak this, and so don't have them get so mad that there's going to be a revolution. But I don't know that those are going to be operative under this next administration. So, Kalima, we did, when we look at our theme each year, we look at the political climate, we look at what probably needs some focus, we look at sort of setting the tone for the year, and this was no exception. And so, what's the theme for this year, and how did the organization come up with it?
Okay, so the theme for this year is Freedom Dreams, Unlocking the Black Radical Imagination. And I think a lot of what we have talked about so far in terms of where we are, if we can call it like on the eve of Trump fascism or however you want to put it, we know that the fight going forward is going to be a hard struggle. And it's a lot of odds we're going up against. Because he's bringing he's threatening every aspect of repression and surveillance and whatnot from all his billionaire buddies and what have you that he can bring upon us. But we have to basically understand that that there's still a way to go forward. We can fight this, but you know what? We have to have the imagination, because it's all about struggle. It's all about imagining what does freedom look like at this time? You know, what does victory look like? And so that's why we have to like say, okay, we have to open up our minds, unblock whatever's in the way so we can really look at how we're going to win this. And this brother, he has like a book that came out 20 years ago that's still very relevant. It's called Freedom Dreams, the Black Radical Imagination. And so logically to us, we believe that his extensive knowledge on this question, because he goes all the way back to the beginning and talk about the victories and the defeats, all the changes we've gone through, the faces of fascism in this country, outside this country, to sum it all up and say, okay, here's where we're at, and what are we going to do about that? That's the kind of broad thing we have to look at, because it's not just what Trump has done. This is part of what's been going on for some time.
Absolutely.
And so he's the one that's going to make us think, hopefully, okay, this is how we need to look at this. And it means that it's all of us coming together. It's not just one organization, because organization think they have all of the answers. No, none of us do. We got to be more imaginative. How can you involve everybody that's for struggle? Uniting the many, you're against the few capitalists that's in power. How you do that? And I think that that's what we're trying to stimulate. Get people, folks, before you even come, think about what is it going to take for us to look at this in such a way that we're going to be winning. Because that's the bottom line. How are we going to win this struggle? And then when he comes and lay out what he thinks is the thing, then we in the movement can talk about that and spread that and finally come up with some ideas concretely how to go forward.
So when I think about imagination and I look around, I don't see much. And I think it's because our imagination as a people has been dulled by the conditions that we live in. It's kind of like the experiment where you put the mosquito in a jar and he, you know, bumps his head a few times against the cover. And then you take the jar cover off and he still just stays there. He didn't know the damn top is off and he can go fly away. That's kind of like what Black people have experienced being in this country, that their talents have been dulled and suppressed. Their speech has been dulled and suppressed. And so in some ways, they've given up wholeheartedly participating in a society that they really did help to create. I mean, everything that this country's built on, we are responsible for based on the free labor that was extracted as enslaved people. So how do we unlearn what we've experienced in terms of the negative aspects of oppression? And what do we need to be rethinking as we look at sort of emboldening our imagination now? Because that's what it's really going to take right now, is like something bolder that we haven't done before. So where are we with that?
Well, I'm going to say there was a older brother named Dr. Duguid back in when I was doing some of the science stuff. And he had a similar story. He said Black folks are becoming like the elephant who had one leg tied to a post in the ground. And as the elephant just kept walking around, after a few weeks, it just took the rope off and the elephant still stayed and
walked in that circle.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this was 30 some years ago, but hearing him tell that story alerted definitely me and others of us, and we were working with youngsters as well, and we could see that just staying in the same old pattern and not, like we say, changing our awareness. And to me, that's this whole thing where imagination comes in. It really means looking at things and thinking about things from all the multitude of views, and I think that's already around us. And I'm finding that is always the key, being able to look past whatever we think we're in right now, and looking for the connections. In fact, what is the fundamental connection? And you know, for us, we are Black human working class people, and if we stray from that, or as we see and notice persons who stray from that, we have a measuring stick. We got a ruler to see what it is we have to stand for and fight for. And like you say, we have to take the lead, you know. And Kalima said it, we have to get ahead of them on how are we going to control these laws. It's not, like we say, we ain't sitting back waiting for them to drop a law on us. We have to be involved wherever they're trying to make these laws, you know, doing things about us without us being there to fight about it. And the other thing, I think the thing, when I think back, it was classes we had on what democracy is, what are modes of production, what is, you know, what really is socialism, et cetera, et cetera. People don't know anymore. And, you know, we tend to say, oh, well, you know, we learned that a long time ago. Did you really? You know, because all this stuff is still here. And can you recognize it when it's wearing a mask, mm-hmm. you know, and we live in masked society.
Yeah.
It's just one big, you know, trick that they keep putting on us. And as we have these discussions, like you say, bring different people in from around the planet, you know, who have books like, you know, like, what is it? Blues People and stuff that has, you know, an analysis. And I think that whole historical perspective is a really good way to see the connection between what was happening, what is happening, and what better start happening.
Well, I'm thinking that first, some of this has to be unlearned. And, you know, you, Maisha, you've been here before talking about the housing work that you've been doing and what that means when people have been out on the streets and don't understand that it's a capitalist society that has created the conditions for them to be out there. So just giving them a bag of groceries is going to be insufficient. It's going to fill a particular need right then, but they need to understand that where they are is not their fault, mm-hmm. that there's a system that's operating and has been operating on them since birth. So knowing that, how do you see helping people unlearn some of the attitudes and behaviors that are going to keep us from having what's now being called unflinching progress going forward so that we understand what democracy looks like, we understand what justice looks like?
So unlearn to relearn, right? We have to be comfortable with that. And a lot of people are not... they don't move fast on things that don't settle with them, or they don't have understanding or clarity what the outcome could look like. For me, as a organizer and a person that understands that the way I grew up is a lot different than the way I live in St. Louis, and I don't want my granddaughter to think it's okay to live that way. That's the part of me that cares, right? So the three C's: caring, courageous, and curiosity. Mm. Be caring enough to see that it's an issue, and be courageous enough to take action, but be curious and courageous and caring enough to see it through. Because a lot of times we start things and we don't see it through. Mm-hmm. We bring people together, but we don't fulfill the mission, you know? So come together and take action. And that's the part that sometimes scares people, the action part, because the retaliation that comes for the entities that we're pushing against. And those are sometimes the spaces and reason that we get harmed, because we're not wanting to change our story on how they see us. We don't have to vocalize our stories, our lives, the way that they see fit. We need to be real about what we're experiencing and that we have the power as the people. We've always had the power. Mm. But as long as they keep feeding us through television, through music, through the poor ingredients that they allow us to pull from their stores, our power will not come out into the world. So we have to start creating community and feeding our community and clothing our community so our community can trust organizations like OBS to keep them safe. And to, if I have the need, that I don't have to depend on the government, because it's going to come to that point. Mm-hmm. When we have to feed one another, and we're going to have to go back to the old days where if my neighbor doesn't eat, how do we come together as a community to make sure the babies eat, make sure the elderly lady eats, make sure that the meds that are needed is in our community? I know a few people that's trying to start their own orgs to make sure that we have the medicine, to make sure that we're able to eat from the ground. But also they're already being retaliated against, knowing what's to come.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. In some ways, it's frightening. But it's easier for me to think of the worst case scenario of what could happen in this country, and then start looking how do we address that, as opposed to let's see what happens as it comes. No, think ahead because it's coming. So, Kalima, I don't know if you ever said the speaker's name.
Okay.
We talked about how dynamic he was, and now he wrote this book. But who is it?
The speaker's name is Robin D. G. Kelly.
And why was he selected as the speaker for this year?
Well, let me just like read straight from what we have here. He's a highly respected scholar and radical thinker in the Black Liberation Movement. In his seminal work, Freedom Dreams, the Black Radical Imagination, is still we feel that it's still relevant 20 years later today. He's a professor. He's a professor at UCLA. He's a prolific writer and sought-after speaker. And so we feel very fortunate that he said, yes, I can come to St. Louis. I like what I've checked out y'all doing so far. So I want to come in and just share with you my whole understanding of how we got to this point here historically and otherwise.
And this will be his first time ever in St. Louis. So he's excited about that. But I think we need him right now. In terms of really trying to break through our own imaginations and what it's going to look like, and the power that we have to come together that probably we haven't utilized in the last, decade, but now is the time. And, one of the things that I respect and admire about Robin Kelly is he's a really good listener. So he's in movement spaces and he's obviously, a respected and renowned scholar and writer, but he is so humble. He will be in a room and you won't even know like who he is or what he is, because he's really listening to people's stories. He's listening to people's analysis of what they think is happening. And what that allows him to do is synthesize it and give it back to us in ways that we recognize it and also in ways that we can move on it. So I know we are totally excited about him coming here. And this year is different from our other anniversaries. And so we'll talk about that. Like, first of all, it's going to be virtual. So people, even if you don't live in St. Louis, you can participate and join the celebration. But there's also a little difference in terms of the way people can purchase their tickets. So what do people need to do to get tickets, Babatu?
Talk to each one of us and go to the webpage. What is it? OBS webpage, basically, and that's where the information is. But each of us has tickets, and you can talk to us.
So the it's different because everybody is going to have to register, and there'd right. be no. No sales at the door, which is something very different from what we've done before. You know, you can come and just get, come to the door, and you usually there's an at door price, but not this year because everything is so so organized, and not necessarily the way we organize, but the where we are at the venue and the cater, every plate literally has to be counted, and so that's the way we've had to comply with that. So. The tickets this year are going to be $60 for general admission for those coming too, because you'll get a dinner and a full program. And virtually, it's $40. And just remember, y'all, this is a major fundraiser. So people may not even be able to attend one way or the other, but certainly you can make a donation towards the organization or the Youth Council for Positive Development, which is a tax exempted. So you'll get, full credit for your donation. So where is this going to be?
Let's see. It says
at the Sheet Metal Hall.
Right.
On Shadow and Jefferson.
Yeah. So can we get a address?
2319 Shadow Avenue, zip 6313.
So this is like, one of the things we've often done is to make sure that we stay grounded in the community, whether it be a community center, a union hall, We've not gone to the fancy hotels. For one, that means we'd have to definitely increase our prices, and we really are not trying to do that. But we are trying to give people a quality program as well as make sure that it's a successful fundraiser. So, you know, Freedom Dreams, Unblocking the Black Radical Imagination, are MCs, one of them will be none other than the Vernie Hayes, who you know and love. And the co-MC with him will be Saidia Murphy, a sister who grew up in the Youth Council for Positive Development and now doing her thing in Chicago. We'll be coming back to join Bernie to help us facilitate that program. But there's also going to be ads. And the different thing about this, these ads is what? What's different about this? Usually we do the ad book. What's going to be different about this one?
Appears that
okay. So what? So this is not going to be an ad book. Right. There will be a commemorative edition that will be released in Black History Month that will have the history of all of, not all of our struggles, but significant struggles over the 45 years. And so people's ads will be interspersed with that. So, so that way is going to have a long shelf life. It will be on the website, both websites for the year. But we hope it really is a thing that people will hold on to as they think about, the legacy and the contributions of the Organization for Black Struggle, to the local struggle for Black liberation and human rights, but also to the national struggle for Black liberation and human rights. So let's just, you know, recap what people should know. What do we, what's the last thing that we want people to know about this program?
What's on the menu? Thank you for asking. So it'll be Italian chicken, spendini, eggplant parmesan, chef's grilled vegetables, garden cavatappi, roast garlic mashers, almond basmati rice, Italian garden salad, assorted desserts, iced tea, water, and coffee. And hope to see you there.
So one of the things about the menu is like we want to make sure that we cover people's the dietary needs. We've never had pork at our events, but we have had meat, and we are trying to move away from that. But, you know, some people still eat chicken and some people still eat turkey, that kind of thing. So we got the Italian chicken spadini, but we also have eggplant parmesan for the vegetarians or the folks who don't eat meat. So there's something for everybody, and we want you to come. Let's just recap the date and where we are going to be and how people can get tickets.
So the date is Saturday, January 25th, 2025, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Grand Hall on Shodo, Sheet Metals Worker Hall, 2319 Shodo Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri, 63103.
And people can get their tickets how?
You can purchase your tickets by going to the OBS websites, Facebook, Instagram, and we have QR codes in that space that has the information, as well as reaching out to the different organizers with OBS, Mama Jamala, Baba Tu, and Kamali. And at 45ACADS at OBS.
That's where you need to send your ads, and you got to do that by January 17th if you want it to be in the commemorative issue.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, people. So, you know, we are going to be announcing it from here on out as one of the events. And so if you can't remember anything, just always go to the website. There's a pop-up there that'll take you directly to the registration page. And we want you to be there. If you can't be there in person, join us virtually. And that's in the comfort of your living room or your bed, wherever. But we want you to be there. We want you to experience the 45th anniversary celebration of the Organization for Black Struggle and the Youth Council for Positive Development. So I want to thank my guests for coming, dropping by today and sharing with us. And, you know, some of the things that we talked about, I hope, you know, people pick those up in the community and start talking about. What does surveillance look like? What does democracy look like? What does us working together in the next year look like? Because Trump has told us with his Project 2025 plan what he's going to do on day one. These are no secrets, y'all. He's told us, here's what I'm going to do, and his first attack is going to be on immigrants. And so, so again, we no secrets here, no surprises. We got to be ready, y'all. That's we got to be ready. So if you missed any of the shows this year, you just go to JamalaRogers.com, find them. They're easy to pick up. You can download them. You can share them. For the next month. Remember Johnson Lancaster was here last week and he talked about the sale that's going on at Progressive Books. You can go by there. You can get, you might even be able to get Robin Kelly's book, but certainly there's going to be other holiday gifts you can get. It's Kwanzaa coming up. They got a big sale going on, so you should go by there to not only support a Black business, but to make sure you get some gifts for the folks in your lives. So we are going to, next week is the final program for Voices from the Battlefield, and that's because we are on the campus of Harris Stowe State University, and they will be closed for the holiday break. And so you will have me as solo, because what I want to do is sum up this year and tell you, you know, what my feelings are about it, and then look forward to next year. But, you know, hopefully in 2025, I'm going to have the ability to bring you into the conversations. And that's one of the things I'm going to be working on during that spring break, since we're going to have some mandated downtime. That's what we're going to be doing. So this is Jamala Rogers, and this is, I'm trying to find my music, y'all. That's why I don't know what happened to it. So let me see. I don't know. Good question. Well, I don't even hear it in the studio. Oh,
is that the volume over on the right?
Yes. Oh, there you go. Duh. This is Jamala Rogers, your host for Voices from the Battlefield, and I will see you on the battlefield. No procrastination.